Davidson, Pierce, Hoffman, and Navarre. This morning, the only thing we have on our calendar is a review of the Department of Natural Resources. And I finally have spotted Commissioner Brady in the back row. Would you like to join us and start us off? I think what the committee expects is to be introduced to your department and to hear whatever comments you have and have your directors come forward if that's what you wish.
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I've asked the, thank you for scheduling us this morning. I've asked the directors to keep their remarks to 5 minutes each. And so there can be time for questions. I will have to ask you to be excused, if I may. I have a meeting at 9.
Certainly.
All of the directors and acting directors are here today. And I, if it's all right with you, I would suggest a change in the order. It will go agriculture, forestry, management, oil and gas, and the rest will continue as outlined. I think everybody, I think every member of the committee is familiar, quite familiar with the Department of Natural Resources. We are in, under the Alaska's Constitution, the protector of the state's interest, whatever that means to various people. And it gives us a number of roles as directed both by the Constitution and the legislature. One of those roles is management for profit, which has to do with sound resource development and promoting sound resource development. Another role is management for recreation. Management to ensure and protect the private ownership ethic, which we have tried various ways. And in this next 2 or 3 year period, we'll be concentrating on fulfilling the municipal entitlements so that the local areas themselves can, if they desire, pass private land to individuals. Management to ensure an agricultural base, and we are at the end of one era and the beginning of a new era in that endeavor. And we'll be concentrating on that very strongly in the next 4 years. Management to ensure fulfillment of obligations to other owners, which is essentially native corporations, municipality, and private owners. And in that role, we are constantly in a negotiating mode and then coming back to the legislature for with legislation for permission to complete exchanges. And I know that the legislators have always shown a great deal of interest in that. But we will continue to be in that mode. The underlying principles for all of these management areas are first protection of the environment, sustainability of a new resource, of renewable resources, getting that value for non-renewable resources, maintaining access, clearing title, and maintaining and strengthening joint management ties with other owners. We know right now, for instance, that the only way we are going to have a new large timber industry in interior, for instance, is to go into some kind of joint partnership with native corporations there, and perhaps some federal land. So we will be moving into that whole era of working with the other owners in common in Alaska for utilization of resources. Those are the only comments that I have right now. I think as you hear the various directors, you will see them filling out the details for all the various management principles. You have on your, in front of you, a summary of budget information and issue information from the Department of Natural Resources. The one thing I would point to is when it says legislative issues, we do not intend to promote legislation on all of the items listed under each department. That is information to you that we expect legislation have on those issues during the session under each of the directorships. So you may, if you want to use that just as a reminder of what we expect the director of the budget to answer questions on. Mr. Chairman, if there are no questions at this time,
Madam Chair, Madam Commissioner, the committee members may wish to ask some questions of you before you have to leave. I don't know if they do. I have one or two small questions. Do the committee members wish to ask the commissioner anything? Just for the information of the committee, there will be another opportunity to hold a confirmation hearing if that is a desire of the committee. That's along with two other departments we've been charged with that responsibility. I believe that in the past, the committee's at times made decisions not to hold confirmations hearings if they didn't really have any questions or any concerns. So this may be a time to get questions answered. I just want to have a couple questions about the budget in general, and know that you're supporting the budget as introduced. And could you give us any general information about the restraints that have been placed upon you as a result of a lower budget? For instance, have any major programs been eliminated, or have some traditional functions of the Department of Natural Resources been substantially reduced or eliminated?
Under this budget, as many of you know, because I've heard from many of you, the recorder's office is scheduled to be refocused. And I understand that when the department made the decision to cut back in the recorder's office and realign, the intent was not to do it until July 1st, to give the legislature an opportunity to discuss it. Then because legislative budget and audit made some decisions about program receipts, the decision was made to cut back immediately because the money was not available. I understand legislative budget and audit is meeting at noon today to reconsider that decision. And if they determine that program receipts are available and the governor's office determines that money is available, those offices will stay open until July 1 and the legislature can discuss whether or not that detriment is acceptable. And I'd be glad to discuss that further, or Sharon Martin could discuss that further if you would like. There are some, all through the department, you'll see that there are large cuts in personnel. This department has taken a larger cut in personnel over the last 3 years than any other department. They've gone from 984 filled positions to 534. Take a tremendous cut. And naturally, are feeling that cut. There has been, as a newcomer, I feel perfectly able to say that so far, all I have seen is tremendous effort to provide service, continued service with the people that are left. Streamlining efforts, a real outpouring of managerial ability on behalf of this department to provide the services. And I think if you talk to the individual directors, they can tell you exactly where they're going to be feeling the pinch the most. As far as we can tell at this time, we'll still be able to provide all the services. There's going to be delays in almost every area. And in some areas, for instance in mining and forestry, there is going to be a slowdown of the movement toward hiring that was started about 2 years ago, toward hiring people with a lot of experience in the private sector to put together and work with larger mines and larger timber sites. It's going to be holding action rather than moving move forward. In oil and gas, we have cut back to 2 sales a year, rather than 3. However, that cutback was in part due to a function of the prices right now. And you might want to talk to the director further on this, but it's my understanding that 3 sales were viable again. From a market standpoint, we could put on.
Go ahead, Mr. Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, you mentioned that the effort was going to be made to hire more people with more private business background to deal with larger kinds of operations. Is that my understanding correct?
Well, we have, in mining and timber now, we are dealing on state land, mostly with very small mines, small timber sales. There has been an interest in the legislature over the last 3 or 4 years in trying to promote medium size and larger projects without ignoring the smaller projects. To do that, you need the people who can help coordinate the permitting processes, both with the state agencies, including our own, and the federal agencies. Every state that has been successful in this kind of move has had to hire those companies now. Washington and Oregon have both done that. And also, again, we're following the lead of Fish and Game Department, who, when they began to get very serious about Alaska-sizing the fisheries, began to hire specialists, people who had experience in both in large processing, private large processing plant, and in large fisheries. And we would like to do the same in the areas of our saleable marketable resources.
Mr. Chairman, I guess my concern is that it seems that the Alaskanization of the fisheries has, at least in some people's view or experience, tended to make more exclusive who in fact benefited. And I guess this was my question in with that type of person that you're going to be hiring. I think there's a difference between running government, and I understand the differences when you have a mandate to manage for profit our state resources. But I do think it bears worth mentioning that there's a difference between running the state and our resources like a business and running them in a business-like manner.
Oh, I agree.
And I have a concern that if we get only into larger operations and get that kind of managerial mentality, I would like to know what criteria do you use to make sure that it doesn't become the exclusive domain of the large corporate entity? And how do we maintain, in fact, opportunities, economic opportunities for the smaller?
Well, right now, what we could use on the smaller grounds, and actually started there, we could use people we could use personnel to go out, for instance, in mining to help work with the placer miners. And help them put together more efficient operations. We just don't have that personnel right now. We ran into the same thing with Diamond Shamrock. We didn't have, we have one mining engineer who can work with the large permitting, both large and small. We only have, in a few places in this state that we know of now, world-class resources where a large company would be attracted. I don't ever visualize Alaska having large companies coming in to the detriment or at all of the smaller miners or timber people or agricultural people. In fact, in my own experience in Idaho and Washington, when you have a mix of small and large, your industry is healthier. And your government is healthier because they tend to balance each other, truly balance each other. Right now we're in a situation where the government tries to be the total balancer when it should be be a mix of private and public. Right now, I've got a lot of public, and probably could use some more private, and the private side, little land, and they could use some more help and working with.
Through the chair. So are you saying then that if we get more big to interact with the small that we have a lot of now, that the government tends more to act as a catalyst in the situation and balances out the various interests?
Yes, that's what I've seen anyway in the western states that have resources. I think that we are going to have a healthy economy and a healthier balance when we, you know, Red Dog is a good example, Greens Creek is a good example, the placer mining industry, if we can solve the water problem so that we get that industry back on its feet again so it can meet standards. The Usability Mine looks like it's finally going to be permitted after 4 years under the federal standards, you know, in about a month. There's really interesting things happening in that whole area, and there's more mining companies coming in right now interested in starting new mines than there have been in about 6 years. The trouble is they're all right now in attorney's offices, and we need to get them out of the attorney's offices and onto the, you know, on the ground. We are developing and have developed a very good working relationship with TEC and Fish and Game. We're going to try to put teams together from those three groups so we can work with the people who are coming in and the people who are here. There's a lot of interest from a lot of the regional corporations and village corporations now about placer mining. We need to have the people to go out and work with and help and get things started. And I think it's going to be really exciting, and I think the same thing is going to be true in agricultural and
Mr. Springer.
Well, we got swamped after that announcement with the recorder's office, you know, with the old finger-pointing scheme. Nobody wants to get cut and just string around the rosy. And I made some observation on that. I think there is not enough coordinating effort among the governor's staff in regards to that. It is a repetitious thing. A DNR cuts one specific function for economic reasons primarily. In that case, it were seven recorder's offices. And that outcry is going to die down. And the next thing is the governor did away with his reps in Bethlehem, Nome. And there's an outcry that's going to die down. But I found through my years in government that each department doesn't look so much as what part it is in the whole government scheme, the state government, but they look at it as their little kingdom and look at personnel management, for example, very narrowly at that, and they try to justify in relation to their task if that position is warranted as a full-time, part-time, or seasonal position. And I don't think there's any attempt really been made to see what is state government, for example, doing in a small town like Bethel, Barrow, or Kotzebue, or so on, and they're most numerous in Alaska. And the perception by the public has been also there's a bunch of fat cats sitting in there drawing good salaries and not being really busy. But I think there's a good middle ground to combine some functions, even though they're interdepartmental, into one or two positions. For example, in Nome, where I'm from, we have eliminated the governor's rep, we are eliminating the recorder's office, or at least that's the plan, and we are looking at doing away with the public safety driver's licensing person, and in itself that may be justified in relation to the workload, but there are really not just inconveniences, there are really a lot of problems associated with that. To do business with Anchorage or Juneau is not only time consuming, it is also very expensive. And I don't want to bother you with details, but in the case of the recorder's office, I see the detriment not only in the elimination of a position out there, but also the problems that fact creates. You know, recordable instruments have very, very narrow defined guidelines, and if you have to send your recording instruments to Fairbanks or Anchorage, that triggers a back and forth flow of letters because that has to be notarized or that is the wrong format. And it's not only very time consuming, it's very frustrating and it's expensive. And I could foresee, for example, in Nome to establish a position that can quite easily handle the governor's interests as an information officer. It could handle, in a short seasonal time we're in session, it could handle the legislative information office. It could, at least in a rudimentary way, handle the reporting necessities, and probably also, say, the licensing. It wouldn't take a driver's license in public safety. And that is what people are criticizing, is that there is not a comprehensive overview. And I can go one step further. It's a pity that the same thing happens with the federal government and the state government and the municipal government. There is just as much a chance to combine some functions between the different forms of government as there is in the department.
I think that's a great idea. I don't think we've ever done that in the state either.
No, that's the biggest pity, because that is the easiest to do, is within the different state departments, and especially if they're all general fund appropriations. That is not a very hard thing to do in the budgetary process.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Gibbs.
Well, I would just add to Representative Nome's comment that perhaps we, if we cannot combine functions, perhaps we could even look into the possibility of itinerant or a circuiting type of expert to do. My understanding is that the recording problems would be relieved by certain technological advancements, and thereby you save that position, and you utilize technology that cuts can happen, and service does not necessarily have to be threatened. I had other questions, but I'll hold them until other people spoke.
The only other thing I wanted to ask about was, again, some of the major programs that appear to be in jeopardy. For instance, the land disposal program. Have you got some different plans for that subject this year?
We are under the cuts that we have recommended, we would be suspending the land disposal program for a 1 to 2 year period, the private, the subdivision programs. We would be concentrating on clearing ties to municipalities. There was a couple of reasons for this. One is that there is constant dissatisfaction with the land disposal. And everyone here is aware of that. We need to do, as a state perhaps, some rethinking about that program. And also, there are now, unlike 8 years ago, there's a great deal of land out to municipalities that there wasn't 8 years ago. In other words, there is land available where the local units themselves could set up private sales. And that land is the good land. I mean, it's reasonably close. Close to services, people would have a good idea of management. They would have a good idea what sewer and utility costs would be. It would be close to schools, so you wouldn't be in a position of having to provide additional services. It wasn't just the cost of the subject of the program, going out and setting aside land and selling it. It's the associated costs of the roads and the all the other amenities that we as a state have decided is appropriate to provide to people and land sales. This is not a decision to end that process. It is simply a decision at this point to suspend it for some rethinking time, and it's also an acknowledgement that private land for private purposes is now available through local companies.
Mr. Schultz.
There's a question on that. I received is Tom here?
Yeah, he's here.
We received a letter the other day, and I thought, what are you going to do with the land disposals that are presently on the board? They've already, all the work's been done. In essence,
yes.
All they have to to do is have an announcement and to go for it.
I would prefer to have Tom talk about that in detail. In general, as you know, we got caught in the survival case. And we have submitted some legislation this session to try to clarify the ambiguities that arose from that. I have spoken to about 25 people with really sad stories about, you know, in the middle of private sales, private lotteries or something, now don't know what is going to happen next. And to tell you the truth, right now I can't give them much comfort. We are going to try to complete those sales that are already out, and we have enough activity out there right now that would take almost 2 years to do that. We are simply under this decrement not able to offer new sales this next year.
Commissioner, it's 9 o'clock, so if you do have to go, I think there appears to be a lot of other questions here, so we will probably be inviting you back for a continued discussion on this. Is there anything else that's burning before the commissioner has to leave? Thank you, and we'll just go ahead and call your directors up in order.
All right, thank you very much.
The first person that has been listed here is Dean Brown, who's the acting director of the Division of Agriculture.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of House Resources. I appreciate being able to brief you today on agriculture. And I never mind speaking to committees on agriculture because you're all involved in agriculture and you eat, and I do. The question is it Alaskan agriculture? And I have some points to make today because I think that all of you know a significant amount about agriculture because it's been fairly high profile. As is the case nationally, it has some problems, and we have some unique problems that both the private sector and the state have to address together. And the first, I have a couple of charts, and the detail's not totally the point here, but there are a couple of points. Can all of you see this from here? I wanted to make a point here on agricultural land disposals. This lists the years from 1978 when the state started into agricultural land disposal. 79, 80, 81, 82, 83, 45, and 86. This includes not only state disposals, but it also includes disposals by the Matanuska Sioux Center Bureau. Delta 1, Delta 2 disposals, you can see the significance here. The point I want to make is this is 176,000 acres in private hands. You have 580 farmers that USDA recognizes as full-time farmers. We have over 1,000 that are members of the soil and water conservation districts. Probably all of you at some point have had some contact on agriculture. So we're dealing with, as a division, the private sector. Seriously, individuals who are farming either full-time economically or what is perhaps a more solid diversified base with other non-farm income. So as a division, we're not dealing with, do we give land out? Do we help pour more money into farming, which has not been occurring, as probably most of you are aware, for the last 2 years. You and I are dealing today with the problems that generated when the state said, oil dollars are going to go away, we're going to need a renewable resource. The problem that occurred is neither nationwide nor in Alaska did any of them realize that barley, which was the big barley project push for export, would plummet from, at that point, $170 a ton to what now is a $70 a ton rate. The debt that was incurred by all those farmers out there still trying to repay debts is still owed, but the cash flow isn't there to pay at this point. Not only that, but land prices went down. Additionally, the second point I would like to make first before explaining the division is you do have an industry. $33.8 million is generated annually wholesale prices, and this is based on USDA product in the state times the wholesale prices. $33.8 million. So it is not non-productive. It's generating jobs, and we have numbers to indicate over 600 jobs in the local economy. Those jobs are stable. They're not going away this year, next year. They have been gradually building. This is horticulture, greenhouses, $14 million. That's only the amount that actually is produced in state, grown in state, that we can call Alaskan horticulture. There's a report out by the University of Alaska and the Alaska Horticultural Association that shows almost $28 million of sales, but we're counting 14 because that's true Alaskan dollars. It doesn't count plants brought in, kept here 15 days, resold. Perhaps a surprising source for the highest point on this graph for revenue generation of this 33.8. Milk, $10.4 million. Matt Muscomade is making a profit. This last year, small, but over $51,000 profit. This number grew 45% from 1985. It's still growing. Potato production, $2.2 million. We export potatoes out. We have Idaho talking to us about sending Alaskan seed to Idaho because it's disease-free. We have a real potential market there. It's good. Hay, $2 million. That not only is generated by the milk industry, feeding the cattle hay and the meat industry, but also by horse owners. It's fairly very stable, small market in hay. There's a great deal of money still goes out of state, but this is money staying in the state. Meat, $1.5 million sales. As all of you know, that really we anticipate will probably double as the Mount McKinley slaughterhouse opens, because we have a lot of animals out there in the important market. Produce, $1.3 million. Eggs, $1.2 million. Grain, Delta Barley Project, what we hear almost all of our major problems from, and all of you are familiar with, generating $1.2 million. So the point I want to make here is this is a broadly based, small, but stable agricultural sector. With that, I'd like to explain a little bit about the division.
Excuse me, please.
Yes,
there's a question apparently about some of the information you've provided.
You said that the grain generates 1.2. Is that total sales?
This is total sales based on USDA volumes times the wholesale rate. And the reason we chose the wholesale rate is that on all of these products, they're processed in state. The milk is processed in state.
I understand.
Yes.
The grain particularly, and I'm wondering how much it cost us for that much production, and whether even at $170 the project would be feasible.
At the time the projects were started, and as you can see, at the prior chart showed 1979, the projections showed that it was feasible for production. The question now is, they are competing and repaying operating loans, which is in fact really the amount it costs to plant and harvest that grain. That's the bottom line. If you can't plant and harvest it and sell it for the amount of money to repay those costs, you don't have a feasible industry. What we're seeing is a cross-section. Some farmers are able to do it, some are not. It is the same as in any business.
Just a comment, I guess. Susitna is considered feasible, too, if you project power costs escalating at about 250% over the next 10 years. I just have a question about the amount of money that we report in agriculture.
And the counterpoint.
Cost factor. I think that what would be very beneficial, and then I would think that after that we would see that the cost of the barley is pretty insignificant. If we would take a ton of fish, figure out how much it costs us, as opposed to the return that we get to the state, we turn around and look at the cost of a ton of barley and the amount it costs us to produce that, the amount of money we put into it. Keep in mind that agriculture and barley, and the reason it's down there, you've got approximately 60,000 acres of land that could be planted. If people aren't going to plant, they'd be damn fools to do so.
Right.
Well, we had Senate Bill 349 that went through last year that the division, had they implemented this bill, these people would be putting giving the land back up to the state and turn around and releasing it and producing. They aren't doing it at this point in time. The only option they had left available to them was the federal program, the PIC. So they opted for that.
Okay.
will be happy to address questions further. The division is primarily changing its direction and has been within the last year. We are emphasizing the marketing aspects of the division because we provide direct services to the industry in marketing, in financing, in increasing seed stocks of all types to support these direct industries. We are not emphasizing new farm development. The lending programs are, in fact, supporting that same trend. And our main goal here is to help those successful farmers who have viable operations, who are financially able to repay, market their product, and provide financing for them. We recognize, and I think the farm industry does, that there is going to be a weeding out process within the next 2 or 3 years of farm operations. The division, in order to accomplish this, and you'll see in your budget book here, has, with the proposed FY88 budget, full-time positions and part-time positions in 4 sections. Plant industry, which is the portion that takes the farm product from the university or from other portions, increases those seed stocks, so you have commercial seed growers who then put those out into the industry to the individual farmers. It simply establishes and supports the industry. Marketing, which in many cases is a lot different from a lot of marketing you see in any other state, because we deal directly farmer to wholesaler or retail, and that's not normally the most common thing that's done. But it's needed here because we really don't have the infrastructure in the town. Direct financing, which is the Ag Revolving Loan Fund, and the emphasis there, and the board has come forward with a troubled debt restructuring program that they would like to implement this year that emphasizes operating loans. Not child loans, not new farm development loans, but in fact support to those farmers who presently are in the industry and existing. We have, as a division, been cut 3 successive years in a row, and while this is part of simply what all of us expect with decreased oil dollars, we are down to a point where we have essentially the lean operating division that our priorities are surfacing very rapidly. And what they are is the farmer walking right in the office and saying, such and such is necessary because it's dollars in my pocket. As such, the budget we put forward has put cuts where we think there are strengths in the industry to take those cuts and retain support to assist the marketing area, and that's the primary. With that, I'd like to turn it over to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've got a couple of questions. First of all, where is most of the grain being marketed?
Most of the grain at the moment is marketed through both Palmer and Delta, but it's going to the dairies, and it's also going some of it into horse industry. And some of it is going into pelleted feeds, which go out everything from dog food to rat food.
Okay.
And red meat industry, which is smaller.
So it's pretty much it's all in state.
Yes, it is in state.
And are we still importing pelleted foods and so on and so forth?
A very significant amount. But all of the barley produced is being marketed by the end of the year. By the end of 1 year period before the next harvest. Except for that is actually the grain reserve program that they keep.
So it would be fair to assume that if oil prices came back up and therefore our state prices came back up, that some of the acreages that's right now in the PIP program could be put back into production and they would be rented in state?
I expect that rather than the acreage in the PIP program, the additional acreage that's not presently being developed, of which Representative Schultz alluded to, would in fact be developed. So you in fact would have the advantage of even further advantage. It's already cleared acreage sitting there, but it hasn't been planted this year. But I anticipate the PIP program, and we'll probably retain that in that program. That's a mixed, if I may comment, that's a mixed blessing. It at the moment, is helping some farmers who are good farmers exist through yet another year of farming, because it's dollars into the economy. They did get into that program because they planted a successive number of years and actually produced acreage, so they earned their way into the program. The federal government is cutting back on that program. While it's not in compliance with what the state development policy has given on ag land, my feeling is our development process has been drawn back to self-sufficiency, no further growth, but let's make what we have work. The dollars are out the door. Let's deal with it.
Here's what I'd like to do. We've got 45 minutes left. We've got six directors left. So if the committee wouldn't mind holding their questions, maybe writing them down, and otherwise we could come back this afternoon. I don't know what other people's schedules are, but I suspect that some of these directors are going to come out of town. I don't want to cut off questions, but at the same time, I want to get through the program. So with indulgence of the committee, I'm going to cut everybody off right now unless it's something you absolutely have to ask at this moment.
Do you want us to write down the information?
Yeah, and we'll be glad to. I think that probably the questions you have, the rest of the committee be interested in. So if you'd like, we would assist you in forwarding the questions to the department.
Oh, I'm sure each of us could be available at the committee's pleasure.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for the opportunity. I'd like to mention one thing. In order to accommodate joint House Senate Finance, the Division of Forestry went up to begin that hearing order. I should have been at 9. And so if you could place them perhaps after the next division on the agenda, then you'd be right back down.
Okay, that's fine. So then Sharon, I think, is next on the list here. Thank you very much, Dean. Commissioner promised that the directors had 5 minutes of opening remarks, and we appreciate that so that we can get through. And it may be that we have to ask some of you back, but for the initial overview, good morning, Sharon.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Sharon Barton, Director of the Division of Management. I used to say about the Division of Management that we have the pleasure of dealing with two of the most exciting commodities in the world, money and people. As of March last year, we have added two additional areas of responsibility and challenge to the Division of Management, that being responsibility for oversight of the data processing functions, and for the statewide recorder's offices. Going on top of those two original responsibilities in the finance and personnel areas. In the personnel area, we have a fully delegated personnel section. The out of the ordinary aspect of this unit is that every spring we have an enormous influx of firefighters working for the department for the state fighting wildland fires under the direction of the Division of Forestry. Last summer we put on paid and eventually let go, but administered throughout the season about 2,000 firefighters. In the finance area, the unit is split about in half. About half the unit supports the department's routine spending of the annual operating budget and capital budget. The other half of the unit is the state's revenue and billing section, which accessed the state's cash section mid-January with a $1.2 million computer system previously appropriated by the legislature. It's comprehensive system. It's came in on time and under budget, and our users are very pleased with the products coming out of it. Not only will they be products for our use and for the Commissioner's Office use, but we will be able to provide you with very timely, accurate reports as meets your needs through the year. In the data processing area, in addition to administering the department's rather extensive DP facilities, we also produce the state's land status plats. in the state recorder's office. As you are probably aware of, after the last week, we have within the system there are 14 offices spread statewide. 10 of those offices are under the jurisdiction of the Department of Natural Resources. In taking our cuts this year, we were guided by the knowledge that as a support unit to all of the rest of the divisions back there, and with a non-discretionary workload, we aren't really managing programs with some very few exceptions. When we stop doing something, it only means that those management divisions have to pick up the workload and do it presumably less efficient than we've done it. So we have tried to shift over only those things that could be picked up most easily, maintaining heavy-duty support to this new revenue billing system as we could through this first year, hoping for some efficiencies in years to come, and keeping support to the state's or to the department data processing functions as high as possible. Also with the hope of keeping, of giving the management divisions those tools to use in times of diminishing personnel in those areas. With that, I'll yield to Jay.
Well, we're pleased to hear about your improved ability to respond to the legislature as a result of your new computer. Are there some questions that you want to ask here, one or two at least, Representative Davis and then Son?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Barton, my question is, you talked about the management of the program responsibility having been dropped, and I was wondering what is the result? You said that probably less effective management of those programs, but what in fact does that translate to as far as state efficiency or state loss of control or state loss of revenue or?
I'm not certain which comment I made you're asking about, but our responsibilities are pretty non-discretionary. That we don't, it's not a choice of doing them or not doing them. If we don't do them, the management divisions do them, and we will still attempt to provide adequate oversight so we'll meet all the basic standards. So we hope there'll be no deterioration of that kind of management, fiscal responsibility, personnel responsibility.
Well, I think the phrase that you used was that they would be less well managed as you turn these programs back because of your cuts. But I was just wondering what the result was.
We believe that a highly trained small corps of administrative people can probably provide the service more cost-effectively to the department than it can be provided any other way. And we hope we haven't diluted that in taking these cuts.
So I guess that's my question.
To what extent?
By cutting, are we saving money or spending money?
After a point, we'll be spending money to save money.
Mr. Chairman, this department has been quite persuasive to this committee on convincing them that it's in the benefit to contract out a lot of state services, namely the park system. I was wondering, Sharon, if you're going to put some bill in to contract out the recorder's offices around the state rather than close them.
Mr. Chairman, that's been a thought that's come to the surface through this discussion, and I'm not aware of a model out there among the other states for doing that, but we certainly would be willing to look at it.
I'd appreciate it. I'd rather have them contracted out than closed, and I guess that's the argument that the Parks Division has made on our parks over my objection to this committee, but I'm not one to fly in the face of railroad trains. I'm about 8-1, I think, on that vote, so if you can't beat them, join them. I'd appreciate the department contracting out all of the recorder's offices that they want to try to close in the next 3 weeks.
There were some discussions earlier with the commissioner about the recorder's office. We can pass along that information to you.
Okay.
Representative Navarre and then Pierce.
And just for the information of the department, Representative Sund, I'm having to go through after that now that the recorder's office is over in several of the districts to the municipalities to run and take the revenues off and
much, Sharon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Look forward to working with you this week. Jim Easton is the next person on the list. I mean, bid for oil and gas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee. I think I may be even briefer than 5 minutes with your consultants this morning. As you can see from the materials that we've handed you before the meeting this morning, the Division of Oil and Gas has three primary responsibilities, and I think most of you are aware of those, and some of you are acutely aware of those. But just to recap them, we are responsible for leasing the state's oil and gas lands as well as the geothermal lands under competitive leasing systems. In addition, we're charged with the responsibility of administering and enforcing the leases that result from those sales, and for accounting and receiving and accounting and assuring the timely and proper accounting of royalties that are paid to the state. In addition, we receive the rental payments and try to track and be sure that people are abiding by the terms of their lease and paying the state full value for what it should receive in exchange for its oil and gas lands. As you can see from looking at our budget this year, we've relative to other divisions within the department, I think we've fared very nicely, we've been very fortunate. Under the proposed cuts that were left for Governor Cooper to review, we would not have fared so well. Fortunately, several of the positions that were slated for reduction have been retained, and as we stand now, the proposal is that the only position that would be eliminated would be the position of the Deputy Director within the division. The effect of that is one that probably all of you can recognize from having someone that you work with, either as an aide or in some other capacity. It just means you do more work and the people under you do a little bit more work, but it's a positive experience generally. Everybody gets to learn a bit more from the experience, and I think that we're all going to be sharing that kind of responsibility as time goes on. So it's something we certainly feel we can live with. We're just going to have to work a little bit harder. The issues that are likely to be legislative issues this year, we've just noted cryptically, PetroStar Chevron contract amendment, ANWR, which all of you are very familiar with, the Arctic Slope Regional Corporation settlement proposal on the land exchange agreement on the North Slope, and HB 41. And I'm perfectly happy to discuss any of those in more detail with you, but I don't want to bore you with them if you already know more than you want to know or you don't have any particular interest with it.
Yeah, Mr. Director Easton, two quick questions. One on the PetroStar Chevron contract amendment.
Yes, sir.
What? How do you see the legislature being involved in that and when?
The involvement would be under the term of the contract. Any legislative or any contract amendment that would materially reduce the revenue that the state would receive would come before the legislature for review, just as a new contract. And this proposal is to amend the contract price term to allow PetroStar and Chevron to deduct from the price they pay a surcharge that's passed on to them and to the state as well for its invaluable oil at this time that comes from the park unit. This is a practice that was not in place until about a year ago, and it's a feature that accompanied the TAPS settlement. As a result of that settlement, there was a provision made that the TAPS carriers, companies, could charge a surcharge beyond the normal quality bank surcharge to compensate for differences in oil properties for oils that are tendered to the pipeline. The park oil is a little heavier, a little bit more difficult to pump. And the theory is, and it is it's theoretically correct, and it's actually correct, that if you're running near capacity or at capacity with a pipeline, and you put oil that's more viscous into it, it displaces a larger volume of less viscous oil that you could have transported. In other words, if you don't transfer as much, you don't make as much money. And so to compensate for that, there's this thing called the pumpability factor adjustment for Kuparic oil, and at present it's about 15 cents per barrel. And Chevron and PetroStar have asked that we agree that we would have allowed that and would have brought it before the legislature last year. And we've gone out for public notice on that, and supposed to, I think there's about 2 weeks, maybe 2 weeks and a couple of days left on that public notice. And a decision will be made at that time by the commissioner about whether or not she wants to support that amendment. And if she does, of course, we would be before you with the bill.
So it'd be a couple of weeks at the earliest.
At the earliest, that's right.
All right, thank you. Other questions? Representative Christie.
Thank you. I've been hearing a lot about the refinery and the needs. You can give us a real quick status. And are you going to see anything for us that we're going to have to deal with?
The first answer is I personally don't know very much about the proposal, other than what I've read in the newspaper. I've never met any of the principals involved. My understanding of the timeline, it would suggest that there would be no way that you would have anything before you in the session. It's so involved that, assuming that they are interested in royalty, which, from what I understand, they claim not to be, it would be a fairly lengthy process, and we would be before you next year at your risk.
On the Camden Bay lease sale, it's going to take place in June of this year?
That's right.
What method of competitive bidding are you going to employ?
That decision hasn't been made yet. We actually haven't even completed the analysis with the folks in what was PGGS, Mining and Geological Survey. They assist us in doing the subsurface evaluation for each lease sale. And they, along with Ed Phillips and the oil and gas staff, the petroleum economist, prepare recommendations specific to each sale based upon the actual factual circumstances and prospectivity.
When will that decision be made?
That is scheduled for sometime in early March. We're trying to get on the commissioner's schedule to go before her probably the first week or second.
Is there a chance that sale won't come off in June of this year?
Of the sales that have been held the last couple of years, I think it is the most likely to have opposition. We've had some suggestion there may be litigation planned for that sale. I guess anything I can say at this point is, of the other sales we've had lately, it's the most uncomfortable one in my mind from the signals we're getting. And the only thing that would delay it, as far as I know at this time, would be third-party litigation.
I think the committee probably knows that Camden Bay is right off the coast there. So there is a possibility that the sale won't take place this year.
From our perspective, from the department's perspective, we fully intend to hold it. But there's always that chance that somebody can litigate.
Who would be most likely to litigate?
We've had several folks that have commented on the preliminary finding, and at least two of the people that commented, or two of the groups, suggested in closing their letters that they didn't think the finding could withstand a challenge in court. And just from reading the structure of the comments, it's clear that, to me at least, that a fairly good record was being established for some sort of litigation. And the folks that submitted those comments, the first one was a joint letter from trustees for Alaska and Alaska Center for the Environment, I believe, and I don't recall the third organization, but it was signed jointly by three organizations. So I think that, you know, we're taking a very hard look at our preliminary finding to be very careful to assure that we've addressed all the issues that they've raised. And we hope that we'll, if they do intend to litigate, it will stand the challenge.
Please advise this committee of anything that's public that that has to do with that sale.
We certainly will.
Any other questions? Did you have anything else, sir? Thank you very much.
If you have any more questions, I'll be happy to speak to any of you individually or something like that.
The next person on the list is Acting Director Laurel Murphy for the Division of Mining, Geological, and Geophysical Surveys.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. And if you'll indulge me for a minute, I'd like to put up an organizational chart. It was prepared for a budget briefing, but the point I want to make is not a budget point, but to sort of explain the division, since we're a reconstituted division. We have over here was the former division of mining. Over here is primarily the former division of geological and geophysical survey. And then we picked up part of the division of technical surveys, the surveyors. And a lot of people don't realize that now they're part of this new division. I'd like to limit my comments basically to talk about mining. Hopefully explain a little bit more what the commissioner was talking about when she talked about mining. We as a division would like to promote mineral development. And mining, unfortunately, you say the word and people either think of gold or they think of dirt. And by promoting mineral development, I think what we're looking at is reasonable regulatory structure, and we're looking at bringing mining expertise to solve the problems. One place that we've done this very well is in coal development. We have both the land management responsibility and the regulatory responsibility for coal development. It's a program we worked on very heavily between 1981 and 1986. So we leased the land. We have probably the toughest regulatory program, I think, in the state for regulating coal development, and it's done in an environmentally sound manner. And one reason why that program is successful is because we have the needed expertise. Our one mining engineer works on that program. We also have probably the only ecologist outside of DEC to work on that program. It's 50% federally funded, so we have enough money to then hire the expertise that we need to review these extensive permit applications and to issue permits and to oversee this mineral development and the actual mining operations. And that is what I think of when I think of mining. That's the gold I see. What other people think of when they think of mining is the small placer mine, and they think of dirty water. And we've been attempting for the last several years to deal with the dirty water problem. This is where we don't have the expertise. We don't have, as I said, I think we need the mining engineers to deal with this problem. We don't have them with the cutbacks, even some of the geologist time that we had going into the field, trying to work with the placer miners to help with their operations. We cut back on that staff. And so that's about all I'd like to say. Any questions?
Mr. Sutton.
Yeah, just a question of balancing here. If I understand what you're saying, that you have the DNR has the overall responsibility for balancing the land management of all the uses of land management. How do you see that responsibility in contrast to what you've just stated, that you want to become an advocate for mining, and I want to use mining or timber, an advocate for resource development, and balance that with your responsibility for overall land management?
Well, again, I guess I see advocacy in a fairly limited sense. Maybe promote is a better term. I see the way we do that is by having a reasonable regulatory structure and by, you know, solving the problems with the expertise that we can develop in this division. I don't see it in terms of PR and promoting particular mining. I see that as what commerce and economic development does. But you need someone who can, say, go to a planning session within DNR and talk about what are the real problems with mining as opposed to perceived problems with mining. A lot of problems, mining has perception problems. And I don't think that's necessary. I think the fact that we're doing what we're doing successfully regulating the coal mining shows that you don't need, it doesn't destroy the environment.
Just like to know on the lawsuit that was filed, and then the recent one that the Sierra Club has filed also, in that respect, what is your recommendation to the governor at this time as far as intervening on behalf of the miners or not intervening or whatever?
I thought about that problem a year ago when the miners asked Governor Sheffield to intervene. Now, as I understand the legal process, intervention would have meant we became parties to the suit and that all our records would thereupon be open for any sort of discovery. Frankly, our fear is that at some point we might be subject to a lawsuit, and that the fact that all the records would be open for discovery was not something we particularly wanted. So my suggestion was that we enter as an amicus. And as I understand, what the miners wanted to get before the court was the financial impact of this lawsuit. So we could have gotten that information before the court as an amicus, filing an amicus brief. So at the time, that was the suggestion of our division.
I don't understand that. Amicus, what is
amicus?
It's a friend of the court, and you're allowed to, I don't know whether you can ever say anything, but you are allowed to file briefs in a court and put other interests before the judge other than the two parties of the lawsuit.
Wouldn't this, if I may?
This is the last question.
Okay. I'm just wondering if, wouldn't it, okay, I don't know why the fear would be there of having to open your records. If that's the case, I'm sure, in a sense, the statement has been made or whatever, enough people are cognizant of it, that I'm sure that that maybe one of the larger environmental groups may just in fact do that, file a lawsuit to get you to open up your records and force the state's hand on that one. So I'm wondering if it wouldn't be better off to just go all the way and say, hey, enough is enough. We are going to intervene on behalf of the miners, and we're going to take this issue to task. We have nothing to hide, and we're going to win.
Thank you very much. We've got just enough time for 10 minutes of parks and 10 minutes of lands, and I think we'll have to deal with forestry later.
Mr. Chairman, members of the Resources Committee, I'm Neil Johansson, Director of State Parks. Like those who are ahead of me, I appreciate the opportunity to talk for a few minutes about the state park system. Primarily, the division manages 118 separate properties, recreation areas in the state, containing about 3 1/3 million acres. We have the largest state park system in America, acreage. Last year, these 118 parks experienced about 6.5 million visits. And for those of you who are familiar with the crowding that we often experience in particular areas of South Central Alaska, such as the Kenai Peninsula, I think you'll understand the press that we feel to the state's Recreation Trust. About 20%, 1 out of 5 of the visitors to the Alaska State Park System were out-of-state tourists. Areas such as Totem Bight and Ketchikan, it's about 90% out-of-state tourists, and the campgrounds that we operate along the Alaska Highway, some of the units near Representative Schultz's district, as an example, are also a higher percentage than 20% non-resident tourist visitors. As such, I guess we see the division's programs as integral to the state's tourism industry. As many of you realize, people increasingly visit Alaska to seek out recreation opportunities, the scenic beauty, the fishing opportunities, the hunting opportunities, etc. And on top of that, according to our surveys, Alaskans pursue outdoor recreation at twice the national average. We hunt, we fish, we camp, we tent, we ski at twice the national average for most of the major categories of outdoor recreation. As such, the recreation industry in Alaska has become our third largest industry. It's worth about 16,000 jobs. There's about $1 billion annually spent into our economy by the recreation industry. And so, obviously, we feel that when we talk of supporting the importance of the tourism industry, the outdoor recreation industry, that it has to go beyond simply funds to try to attract people to Alaska through the Division of Tourism. We have to care for those areas that we manage in the state park system. This is the reality that we face on a day-to-day basis, primarily in the summer months, of course, in maintaining units of the state park system. We're not trying to kickstart to life some new industry. It's very successful, and the public land trust is where a lot of the recreational pressure occurs, and we feel very strongly that we should continue to do an adequate job of caring for that. In addition to managing the state park system, the division also manages all state programs that deal with history and archaeology. The Alaska Historical Commission, the Office of History and Archaeology, the Archaeological Survey are all programs contained in the Division of Parks and Outdoor Recreation. And finally, the third program that we manage is the administration of all federal and state grants dealing with outdoor recreation in the state, including, as I said, federal money. The Congress makes appropriations annually into historic preservation account and also the Land and Water Conservation Fund. That federal money is given to the Division of Parks to administer grants to communities on a 50-50 matching basis. Towards the management of these various programs, the Division is the most decentralized division within DNR. 80% of our money is spent in field operations, dealing with things such as the, as illustrated in this photograph. And as the most decentralized division, we have offices in Kodiak, Ketchikan, Haines, Sitka, Juneau, Wasilla, Fairbanks, etc. Our money essentially goes into primarily field operations. the three primary goals that we essentially rest our programs on are service to people, doing an adequate job of caring for the facilities that have been developed over the last 20 years in the state park system. Also, the protection of critical resources such as totem poles and totem by or land and water resources within the park system. The parks don't belong to us today. They belong also to future generations, and we have to maintain, I think, a keen sense of that.
Well,
the third thing is to continue to understand the need to strengthen the visitor industry. The Department of Natural Resources isn't simply those resources that you can chop down, put in a pipe, or haul off in a truck. It's the scenic beauty and the waters where people like to fish, the places where people like to go camp. That's also a resource, and it also is part and parcel to the department's total program. In an era in which the division will have lost approximately 39% of its budget over the past 3 years, we have become increasingly aggressive in the area of volunteerism. Last year, we had more volunteers working in parks than employees. We recruited and trained and put to work over 500 volunteers who invested over 50,000 hours in visitor centers as campground hosts, trail crews, etc. Also, for the past 2 years, we have had a prison inmate labor program. We had over 33,000 hours invested in the park system last year by inmate labor. Mr. Chairman, in your district, almost all of the janitorial maintenance done now in Chugach State Park is done by prison inmate labor. And in fact, over the past year, it has become increasingly obvious that we can't keep the state park system operated anymore without both volunteers and prison inmate labor. If we were to lose those programs, there would probably be a lot of problems trying to keep the system open and operating. The last two items I wanted to mention from the standpoint of our directions here is the use of National Guard training exercises. We have an agreement with the National Guard which has them doing a lot of the construction activities now in parks. Many of your districts have seen the National Guard efforts. Finally, we have increasingly focused our CIP accounts into the rehabilitation and expansion of existing facilities versus the going out and creating something totally new to have to care for with a decreasing operating budget. Essentially, our two legislative efforts this year are the establishment of a state park fee program. And, of course, this committee has dealt with House Bill 16 on two or three different occasions in the last couple of weeks. You're aware of our efforts. I've testified here on the state park fee program. And the second item that we would like to see become a reality this year is the establishment of the Willow Creek State Recreation Area, which is about 3,000 acres along Willow Creek up in the northern
Mississippi Valley. We'll have a chance to talk about that tomorrow. I don't know if you're going to be in town. Are you going to be here tomorrow?
Unfortunately, I won't be. I have provided the information to Representative Menard to testify. Mr. Chairman, in the interest of time, I would call that the conclusion of my remarks. Unless there's any.
I just wanted just to allow to the committee that we've got about a little less than about 10 minutes left. And I originally said that we'd get Tom Hawkins up here, the director of the Division of Land and Water. But he's in town more often than George Holliday. So unless there's a quick question that somebody has for land and water people, I'll ask George to come up and give us a couple minutes on the Division of Forestry. And again, if the committee members have questions or information that they would like to get from the department or any department, feel free to ask our staff to assist you in making those requests. Mr. Hollick, good morning.
Mr. Chairman, members, thank you very much. I'll make this very brief. The two main functions that the Division of Forestry works with is two of our pictures that we have on your wall over here. The one on the left, we're looking at making resources available. This is what we do off of state land. And we also do the forest practice activities in conjunction with Fish and Game and DEC on private lands. And this is kind of a regulatory program that we try to work into more of a educational program so that the individual learns by doing and making what we call best management practices available to them. But being able to do our resource jobs, we also then have to do our second job, and that's the one of fire control. And that's the big dollar program that we are involved with. But there's several things that you can look at fire. It's possibly like you have fire insurance on your home, and sometimes when nothing happens, you say, well, why did I make all those payments? But if it ever happens, you're always awful glad that you've got it, and it's something that you just can't drag out of the air and put back into it at the last moment. So we kind of look at this type of a program as being our fire insurance for the resources that we have, both personnel, houses, timber, whatever they may be out there that the public wants. But there's several things that we've done in our fire program to try to keep our costs down, and this is the first one would be a planning program, and you may or may not have heard about this. We've gone in to try to make our fire activities on the values that are on the land. And so we come up with some criteria that we use, and we've come up with four categories. We call it critical, where we have to go in and take care of the operation immediately. This is life, property, and this type of damage. We have some what we call full, and this is where we will put all the forces that we have to go in, that there may be some other types of activities that need to be protected. We have a modified, whereby we will take a look at it and work on it, but it's an area that maybe is going in a different direction, so therefore we can be able to stop and pull back off of it. And then we have limited, and this is one that we just kind of take a look at, but we let it burn. And to keep our costs down, we have put 65% of the state land in limited. So we do not protect a lot of state land with full forces. If we did, we'd have to be in here for double the budget trying to get money for you. And we just don't see that's right, because the resources out there are not what we should be putting the state dollars into right now. We have an agreement with the Bureau of Land Management and the Forest Service whereby we protect each other's land within a given area. We've kind of divided the state up. They take the northern half, we take the southern half. It's 134 million acres of protection that we provide for each other. And in that, we feel that that saves the state around $3 million, because if we had to put full forces on to protect all of the state, private, and municipal lands, which the statute says that we're supposed to, we would then have to have a much larger workforce. So this allows us not to have two firefighting forces within the same area, and we jointly can use services of each other depending on what the season's like. We try to use as much military surplus equipment as we can to keep our costs down that way. We take some of this equipment, refurbish it, and make it available to the local fire departments. This is a good workforce for us in certain areas, but their training and equipment are primarily house fires, structural type fires. So we have to come up with something that will allow them to get out and be able to work on other lands. Then when we get into our resource programs, and which is where most of our cuts came in this year's budget, we're looking at ways that we can still do the job and make the timber available. We've been providing about 20 million board feet a year to the small operator. We intend to continue to do this. We'll make more use of our firefighting forces when the weather's correct to allow us to use them. We will also probably have to go into some larger sales. The operators have asked us for larger sales or a longer term type sale, because the individual who uses 300,000 feet a year would like to have 1 million feet. We have some regulations that give him some problems. So what we've decided to do is take a real hard look at our regulations and see if there isn't something that we can do that will ease this burden and allow us to have a longer-term sale and allow the operator to not have to put up as much bonding money or deposits or front-end the money. We're looking at some large sales to try to promote industry. We have some 50 million foot type sales, and we're going to try to either attract some new industry in on that, or maybe have some of our local people decide that they would like to invest some more money and come into that type of a picture. So we were proceeding with those actions. We are also looking at trying to find markets for our hardwoods. The state has a tremendous amount of hardwood, probably much more hardwood than it does in white spruce or particularly the interior. I keep leaving off Southeast because we don't have too many activities except for the forest practice work in Southeast. And so we're trying to promote development in the interior from the Anchorage to Fairbanks area primarily, and some on Kena. So we are looking in the furniture market possibly for hardwoods and anything else that we can work that way. We also are going to continue a big effort on promoting use of Alaska woods. This is taking an educational process.
There's some real problems with that. I know Representative Pierce has worked on one of those problems, and we just had a call from a guy the other day that they're going to build a new post office in Talkeetna. And this guy produces logs locally, but the specs on the post office require that they import the logs from Michigan. And that's not the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard of for Talkeetna post office. I know.
This happens on state contracts, and we have been working with...
Well, with the Aklutna Water Project in particular. We're out of time, okay. George, but I do have some additional questions, and perhaps other members do, too, and you may see them in writing and appreciate your
time. Please do, because we'll appreciate the opportunity.
The Division of Forestry is building buildings.